Hello and welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast, your place for all things Devy, college DFS, and college football betting advice. I am your host, Stéphane Lacoe, and today I am joined by the one, the only Travis May. Travis is a senior writer for RotoViz, the host of the Campus to Canton podcast. You can find him on Twitter at FF underscore Travis M. Travis, thanks for joining me today. How you doing?
Always great to join you, Stéphane. You and Wispay, who you and I probably both dearly miss at this point. He's off being a dad or something right now, but always a joy just talking football with you guys.
I was texting him earlier today. I was like, dude, I miss talking football with you, man. So we're actually going to connect later this week, a little happy hour or something like that, and just talk, hang out, do the good stuff. But yeah, he's doing well. So, but he is sorely missed, but it does mean that, we're a little bit lighter on Ohio State conversation. So, you know, we'll keep that going tonight though. I'm excited to have you on. I wanted to put together a show just kind of talking about one of my new favorite league types, and that's this Campus to Canton, league where you basically run a dynasty startup, you know, when you get going, but then alongside of it, you have a huge Devy league where you have just a ton of college players and you're getting points for them. It's basically two simultaneous leagues. But anyway, we're going to get into all the details. That's what this whole podcast is focused on. And I could not think of a better person to talk to about all this than you. It's kind of like the rookie and the veteran, you know, like me and you getting together. I think it could be really fun. You've got a lot of experience with these leagues and you talk about them a lot. You have a podcast kind of with a similar title. So like you're the perfect guy. And I thought like this is my first season joining these. This is a great opportunity for us to have a conversation between two people who won. I'm looking at it with fresh eyes and lots of questions and you've got a lot of experience, a lot of answers. So I thought we could have some fun doing this. I do have, of course, you know, Devy experience, but this is a whole new kind of crazy. So I'm excited to jump into that. But before we do, did you see Florida State's spring game? Because I was watching some highlights and Mackenzie Milton looked good.
Yeah, man. It's just incredible that he's even walking at this point. He destroyed everything in his leg. And that was 2.5, almost 3 years ago in the 2018 season, I believe. And it's just been forever since he's even played ball. But for him to get back on the field and not only get out there, but look great is a lot of fun. And that's good for Florida State. That's good for ACC. That's good for college football.
Yeah.
That's good for Mike Norvell's offensive install. He needed a quarterback that could do anything. So I think Chubba Purdy could get there, but Mackenzie Milton is kind of an instant Band-Aid fix and is going to do good things for them.
Yeah, I'm excited. It was just, he's one of those guys, like I'm not a Florida State fan at all, but watching him just, even just in a spring game, just absolutely like the put the football like in some really tight windows, threw a beautiful touchdown pass, had another, he threw a 45-yard pass on a rope right into wide receiver's hands. Like it was fun, felt great for the guy. But you know what? Tonight, it's getting late. We're having some fun here, but we're going to get into, I want to spend most of our time just diving right into this style league with some just basic overall questions. But before I do that, it was funny. I was talking to a buddy of mine and he actually was a co-host on the RotoViz Fantasy Baseball podcast. So he is familiar with RotoViz and Jake Beeman is his name. A lot of you guys probably remember him from that podcast. We were talking, he's like trying to get into some really like deep baseball dynasty leagues. And he's like, man, I'm in this awesome league. It's me and a couple of our friends. He's like, but man, like I love being in leagues with my friends, but it's just hard to get them to want to really be as committed and nerdy. And I was like, bro, listen here. You can make your friends, like you can't make your friends do a dynasty league. It just doesn't happen. But you can get a dynasty league and then those guys can become your friends. Like that's the way you got to do it. Like finding 11 buddies who are as degenerate as you is really tough. But if you find just 11 other degenerates, it's easy to become friends with them. So that was my advice to him. And I've loved getting deep into like Devy and this C2C stuff because there's some awesome dudes out there that, and ladies as well, of course, that really get deep into this stuff. And it's an awful lot of fun. As far as the C2C leagues, where does it rank on like your favorite to least favorite type of league? Like what's your favorite league style to play in?
Yeah, college to Kenton leagues are the best because you have a full college fantasy league, you have full NFL, and you get this pipeline of players that you get to automatically have them on the from the college and populate over to your NFL side. And so you can have these players on your team from the time they're freshmen in college until they retire. And so that's what I love. I mean, like my podcast, the College to Canton podcast, is, I mean, it's all about the journey from the beginning to end, and like them even going into the Hall of Fame discussions and things like that. So it's just that whole process, I think, is intriguing to many people. But I think it's just funny because most people don't even know that this nerdy little world even exists. But I think if more people understood that it did, they would actually be interested and try it out. Because most people, like when I tell them about this, they're like, one, they're like, how does this even, where do you do this? Like, what is this right. thing you're talking about? But I'm like, right. oh yeah, this has been going on for a while. We're super weird. And it's okay.
Yep. Yep. No, that's great. It's becoming my favorite too. I always liked Dynasty Leagues. They were always great. And then I was introduced to Devy Leagues and I thought that was great. And then now all of a sudden these are just insane. And I know like my four kind of home leagues with my buddies that are just like, you know, your standard, not even super flex, you know, just regular. They're going to feel so weird now because it's like redraft. It's like, what is redraft? Yeah. This is insane. But there's a place for all of it. Of course.
These players for 1 year.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is fun too. Yeah. You get to switch up your lineups and it's good stuff. But let's just start with just giving a quick rundown, if you wouldn't mind. Just what is a College to Canton league? You kind of explained a little bit already, but kind of go into some of the nitty gritty about it. I'd love to hear just even some of your favorite settings, but just the basic, you know, the 10,000 foot view of what these leagues are like.
Sure. I mean, most of the time you're drafting them deep enough that waivers aren't necessarily going to be a thing very much, really, on either side, college or NFL. So like we're talking, I think all my leagues are at least 45 players deep on the NFL side and college side. So you're rostering a whole lot of players, but it gives you a lot of people to get excited about throughout the year and seeing them develop on the college side. So it's got, you know, you basically have an entire NFL kind of quote unquote normal fantasy league going on one side. And then you've got your college fantasy football league on the other. And generally, there are two completely separate championships. And generally, you know, depending on how you have it structured, you can have kind of like a rolling prize for that keeps on getting larger each year until somebody finally wins both at the same time.
Oh,
and
wow.
And they, you know, obviously get a larger reward for actually pulling off the W on both sides. Because, I mean, with this format, I mean, you see people like basically just giving up completely on one or the other, especially like, you know, they're getting older on the NFL side. They're like, crap, I'm just going to punt and just trade for everything college and just see if I can build up some prospects and go and just kind of full rebuild mode. And so it's been funny doing this for, I guess I'm in year four in a couple leagues, and teams, you know, they decide to kind of blow things up from time to time. But you can rebuild, but just by trading players from like one side or the other, if certain owner, you know, certain managers in your league actually overvalue the college side versus the NFL side. And so you'll never have two leagues that are anywhere near the same just because of the people involved, people that are playing. And so I like to kind of keep it simple though, in terms of like the league size. I don't think you need to make it something crazy. 12 to 16 leagues is all you're really going to ever want to do. Anything over 16 is going to get kind of crazy unless you're doing two copies.
So you'll have like 12 to 16 fantasy managers, and each of those managers has both an NFL and a college squad.
Yep, exactly. And your college players, as soon as they graduate or declare early for the draft, they automatically get on your NFL squad. And so, generally have to make some room. But most of the time, you don't have like 50 players on the NFL side that you're like super attached to anyway.
Right, right. So a couple questions. And these are just, you know, I'm hoping that a lot of people listening to this, you know, have either heard of it or by hearing about this, get excited to play. So what are some of the platforms? Like when I started, I had no idea that you could do college fantasy. So what are the platforms that you use in most of your leagues? Maybe maybe they're not all the same one, but what are the some of the leagues that that you play on? Are they on, like, you doing them on MFL, ESPN? Where do you usually host?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved my fantasy league. That's been the go-to for all things customization. You can create custom players even in there, and it's just easy to kind of maneuver around with all the weird rules that you want. So on the NFL side especially. So on the NFL side, I pretty much always use my fantasy league. I use Sleeper in a couple places, but not for college Canton leagues. But I think Sleeper is actually going to try to create an actual Devy format within their app here in the next year or two.
Nice.
Already in works, apparently. So Sleeper is going to try to create something where you can do Devy, where you don't have to create custom players or anything like that, or custom import players or anything like that. They just have the college players integrated into it. And I believe they're working on college the Canton formats as well, although that'll be probably super rare. But if they did kind of make it all in one place, it'd be easier, because as it stands, and what most people have been doing with this, is they'll play college side somewhere like Fantrax, which has been great. It's done the trick. Some people don't like a few of the quirks, like when players actually get added into the database. Like, we'd love to have the full incoming freshman database all set by like declaration day in February for all these recruits that are incoming, but that's just not realistic to have.
Sure.
25 plus players in the system already. So sometimes you kind of have to wait on the college side draft for Fantrax to kind of get all their players updated, rosters updated, and things like that. So the timing is interesting as it currently stands, because college Canton leagues have only existed for maybe 5 years realistically. So there's just not a singular place to play just yet, but I know Sleeper has that in the works. My fantasy league for customization combined with Fantrax for college side has been the way to go. And I don't mind doing that, but as a commissioner, that can be a lot to kind of juggle and transition over.
Yeah, but it's a lot of manual entry too, like when you're switching from, like you said, when someone moves from college to the NFL, you're having to manually add players to rosters, and that can be a lot of work for sure.
But Fantrax does a good job with all the live scoring updates and everything, with the exception of games where they're like a G5 school is playing an FCS school that's not even on TV anywhere, and they don't even have like live updates until like the game's already over. There'll be some exceptions. Yeah. So it'll feel different if you're used to playing just like, NFL, ESPN fantasy, that everything's updated all the time, no matter what, as you go. But that's just the nature of college. It's just, there's 130 teams. So any given weekend, you're going to have a heck of a lot more games than the NFL.
Right.
So it's just a lot more to keep track of.
Yeah. So a couple questions along those lines real quick that are just popping up in my mind. In the leagues that you play in, or the leagues that you recommend, are all college players eligible to be rostered, or do you try to keep it to just Power Five schools or Power Five and Group of Five? Do you allow FCS players, like a guy like, Trey Lance, who is the hotness coming into the NFL draft right now? Was he eligible for, because he was playing at North Dakota State, was he eligible for your college team, or is he going to be one of these like guys that, one of these rare unicorns that like actually has a ton of value in your rookie draft once you're already, kind of going, after your, like, not in your startup league, but like your following year or whatever?
Yeah. All my leagues draw the line at Division I. You have to draw the line at some point. It's
130 is already enough. This, yeah.
But like, 130 teams is a lot of players. There's like, 85 scholarships, 130 teams. Like, that's a lot of freaking players. And then if you add FCS, community college, like what? NIAA, whatever. Like, it's just, you got to just stop it. And it's easier to kind of draw the line. And because, frankly, there's almost 800 post high school football programs in the U.S. So I don't want to mess with that.
No, that's good. Okay, couple of other settings questions. Do you usually do super flex, tight end premium? You just doing kind of more standard? Do you like PPR? Is there an industry standard for these C2C leagues? If not, what's your preference?
I think because of the people that are playing in these leagues are all already like the super weirdos that like all the premiums included. I don't think I've seen anything that hasn't been super flex.
Yeah.
Where you can, you know, start at least one, if not two quarterbacks. College side, even, I think one of the leagues is just straight 2 QB. You have to at least start two quarterbacks.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's like, cause I mean, in the NFL, you only have 32 quarterbacks and, you know, 16 or 17 of them aren't terrible. In college, because defenses are absolute hot garbage, they're really like 80 plus quarterbacks that are worth starting in any given week. So you absolutely have to start at least two quarterbacks in this format. And really, tight end premium is really helpful on the college side, because college tight ends are just trash for the most part. Like, and schematically, most teams don't even use them at all. So they're not deep. So that creates a super interesting element when you have a true difference making tight end. Now, I do not advocate for two tight end requirements for college side. That's obnoxious, just because there's, you know, like the greatest tight ends every single year, like capping it like 700 yards, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's not, I don't like doing that, but you know, PPR, super flex. I see super deep starting rosters. Like, you know, you might have to actually start 15 or 16 players in some leagues. I think most of the time it's less than that, but I think one of my leagues, I think we have to start 15 or 16, I think.
So yeah,
you're flexing, you know, four or five or six different guys, you know, every single week, which is a lot. But when you think about the player pool, it's really not.
Right, right. Quick question. If people are intimidated by the whole college side because it's just new, you know, like we've all been doing, you know, fantasy football now for decades. Now with DFS, yeah, we're even like, even us who are like dynasty junkies, like we're able to get our variants of players through DFS. However, the college side is much newer. In some states that allow regular betting, you can't actually do college DFS yet. Like, it's not completely all over the place. So for people who are a little bit intimidated by the college side of a C2C league, what would be your soothing comments to let them know that, yes, they too are welcome among us degenerates?
Well, the truth is, it's such a giant player pool that the truth is, no one, no matter how much of an expert you are, can always have a grasp of every little thing. It's just not going to happen. And so even though I might be on a podcast talking about it, and I might know who the wide receiver for, you know, a random G5 team is, doesn't mean I know everything. So I think there's always something to learn. And if we just kind of view it as just a fun learning experiment, and that's really what this is, because like, even creating these new formats, we're just experimenting. We're making things up as we go along. So it's
right.
It's like, and there's so many, it's such a wild frontier that there's nothing to be afraid of. Cause like when you're having to start 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 players, it's even more luck than the NFL side, frankly.
Sure.
You know, it really is. Like, I might know a bunch of depth charts and a whole bunch of other stuff, but if you added two or three more flexes that were just kind of lucky for the school that you root for in the Big Ten, and I didn't.
And you're going up against Georgia's defense that week with your Alabama wide receivers or whatever it might be.
All the disparity in the competition, like the best players might be terrible week over week because of who they're playing. So it's just it's a lot, but it's fun because you're constantly learning, and there's constantly somebody to root for that you may have not even heard of until the week before you drafted them. But it's just, it's fun. And for me, like, that, just from a social aspect, I can talk to anybody and everybody from every major metropolitan area in the country now because of college sports.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know all their favorite players.
You touched on a couple things that we're going to dive into in just a little bit regarding, you know, the types of players and that it's not always the elite NFL prospects that are the most rewarding on a week-to-week basis from your NCAA team. So we're going to get into some of those in a second. First, I want to break for just 2 minutes to hear from our sponsors. That way we can keep the lights on, keep the show running. We'll be right back. I'm going to get into just some startup strategy questions for you, and then we'll just continue to dig a little bit deeper.
Hey, RotoViz Radio listener, this is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to rotoviz.com, click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021, and you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to rotoviz.com and subscribe now.
All right, we are back. Travis, again, thank you so much for joining me today. It is always good to hear your takes on these things. And I do recommend everyone check out Travis's podcast as well, part of the RotoViz family, of course. I want to talk a little bit about startup strategies. So in your startups, do you typically have the same approach? Do you try to target youth versus veterans? Do you typically try to focus more on, you know, maybe the college side or the NFL side by trying to, you know, maybe make a trade where you're swapping your first round pick for a haul of college players? Do you have a typical strategy that you like to use? And then attached to that, maybe if there's more of a strategy behind it for winning that you see, or so maybe you say, yes, I like to trade my, you know, my second round pick for three or four college picks. Not only because it's fun to have higher college draft capital, but I also think it's a long-term winning strategy. Like, I'd be curious to hear what your preference is, and then also how that relates to winning. Or if it's just like, no, I every league is different. Sometimes I focus on one more than the other.
Yeah, so I think most of the time I'm never trying to add a whole lot more in the startup on the college side, because frankly, because it's two
you
leagues.
Mean, but you mean really like gaining? One. Like, you're not trying to gain additional roster, like draft picks? Is that what you're saying, or higher draft picks?
On college side, not okay, necessarily, yeah. No. If anything, I want to add more NFL because they've already made it. Like I want the potential of a longer NFL career and arc there. So I'm going to definitely, if I'm going to try to add anything, it's going to be an extra first four rounds kind of pick on the NFL side, so I can make sure I get one more younger, proven, you know, asset and player there, if not two in that range. And I don't mind trading way down in the college side. I think in the league that you just joined here recently, I advocated for that. And you had an opportunity to do almost exactly that. And, yep. And your NFL side squad is just stacked. Stupid. To win the championship right now. And I think that that's easier to kind of guarantee yourself that kind of positioning, even more so than it is on the college side, just because of the extreme depth on the college side, you can build out your roster in a completely different way and not always rely on just the early rounds to build out a winning roster. Because of the college Decanton aspect of it, you get people reaching for NFL potential, but not necessarily just college production on the college side. So you could have a whole bunch of mid-round picks and still do okay on the college side production-wise. And that sounds kind of crazy to someone who's not played that in a college league before, but there's just so many productive players on the college side that aren't there on the NFL side. So just from a positional scarcity and player scarcity standpoint, I'm always looking to add value on the NFL side and potentially have a larger window there than maximum. Even if I'm drafting a true freshman that I think is amazing or a sophomore that I think is amazing, I'm getting a year or two or maybe three that I can really trust them and on the college side. Like with the NFL, like it could be 4, 5, 6, 7, 15 if we're talking quarterbacks. You know, I definitely prioritize that side more than anything.
That's really good, because when I made that trade, when we were talking about that, I was thinking of it from the perspective of, you know, a lot of times I'm going to be drafting players hoping they make it to the NFL. This guy's already in the NFL, so I'm already, you know, one step ahead.
Yeah.
And that's true. But you just brought up another point that I hadn't thought about that is even more profound. And that is, this college player, I get, like you said, 2 to 4 years of production max. Maybe four if, like, you know, the odd player. But even Trevor Lawrence, like, only 3 years.
Yeah.
But three Trevor Lawrence in the NFL is going to give me, like you said, 15 years. So in those startup drafts, trading a couple picks for an NFL player isn't just getting you a locked in NFL player. It's getting you two, three, four times the amount of years of production. So I hadn't thought about that. I love that. Continue. I'd love to hear some more of your thoughts around strategy around youth or veterans. So that was really good. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. And I think it's just also because of the positional scarcity of quarterback in the NFL versus the quite crazy opposite on the college side. I even more so target quarterbacks early in the rounds on the NFL side than I normally do. Like I'm fine rolling out Kirk Cousins and his redheaded stepchild, whatever quarterback you want to, put in that similar tech.
You talking about Andy Dalton?
Yeah, sure. I don't know if I'm comfortable with it. Yeah, sure.
Redheaded. Sure. I just had to go with it.
Yes. This year, Kirk Cousins and Dalton. Like, I'm okay, rolling a quarterback 12 and a quarterback 14 in a normal dynasty league and stacking my flex positions. And that's worked great. I'm consistently competing in all my leagues doing that. I'd never spend up for a Mahomes or a Lamar, or, the sexy names that everyone wants to sell their entire roster for. And that's not what I do in normal dynasty leagues, but with quarterbacks in these type of leagues, I like to basically set myself up for the long haul with quarterbacks and try to fill in my flex positions from the college side. And I'm fine rolling with super productive, just dominant quarterbacks in college. And if I already have a Patrick Mahomes on the NFL side, or if I've got a Kyler Murray or somebody else that's younger on the NFL side, I don't have that pressure to man, I absolutely have to smash quarterback on the college side, when really I don't want to spend that crazy early pick on a quarterback on the college side, because I can draft, Ohio's starting quarterback for this year and probably do amazing and get him in round 15 to 20. Or Western Kentucky's transfer from Houston Baptist.
You didn't mean Ohio State. You meant the Ohio Bobcats.
Ohio, from the Mac. Maction. Yes. I could just get some random nobody that just is an amazing star and could have got him in round 35, and I'm starting him every week as a quarterback. You can do that on the college
side. Yeah, so quick question kind of around that. When you're putting together your rosters, are you viewing your NCAA squad as solely a feeder for your NFL team? Or are you looking at it as I want to win right now, so I'm going to have some action. I'm going to have a lot of MAC players. I'm going to have some Sun Belt players, guys that probably won't make the NFL. And if they do, they're not going to have the draft capital that we, typically hope for. I'm curious which kind of approach you take, or do you use your first few round picks in the college side to kind of fill your more traditional Devy leagues, where you've got 3 to 6 Devy players that, you're not getting points for on a weekly basis, but they're solely feeder types? What's your approach when it comes to looking at your NCAA squad? Is it a feeder, or are you competing to win that and you don't really care if they make it to the NFL?
I've tried both just to mess around with it and see what works. But mainly it's a feeder, because it's so deep, it's 40 plus rounds generally all the time. In a startup, first 20 something rounds, if not 30, I'm like, okay, how do I gain an advantage and target somebody that I believe will have some, at least they don't even have to hit in the NFL, but a year from now, I can sell somebody on the fact that they might be projected for the NFL. Mm. Because having a super productive University of Louisiana Monroe wide receiver for 3 years is cool, but they're absolutely worthless to try to trade, because there's 57 other guys that are the exact same player that you can plug and play in the roster, and you can draft them late, but they mean absolutely nothing to nobody in trades. They're a dime a dozen. Dime per 100. I don't care. And so I've found if I'm going to, if I'm going to treat it like a feeder, I'm going to more often than not have, a half dozen to a dozen players that I might not even legitimately be interested in their NFL future, but there's an argument for the fact that they might have one. And then sure. I can move them for somebody else on the NFL side that's kind of a filler for my roster, or I can move them for more productive college players that are quote unquote worthless in trade that I just mentioned because no one cares about their NFL future. So I could trade, like I could basically target like a random high pedigree Oregon running back this year because you're in my league and I can bait you for that next year and
yes.
and sell and yeah, exactly. And move that one Oregon, you know, freshman after doing nothing this year, but he might do something the year after and get two kind of productive proven players that don't have an NFL future. If it is that I have too many of these NFL projections that aren't actually producing right now. So on the front end, 20 to 30 rounds of NFL shots. And then I may find myself trading those players away to fill in the other spots where I missed because I'm not getting a bunch of production, treating it as a feeder.
So do you find that you kind of gravitate more towards the Power Five schools when drafting in the earlier rounds?
Absolutely. Because I mean, when you talk about, you know, making it to the NFL and draft capital and that translating, the hit rates are just abysmal for Group of Five conference guys, even the really good ones.
Right.
So yeah, definitely do that. And realistically, like even because college defenses, as I mentioned on the first half of the show, just they're bad. Like there's only, I mean, if you look at like the really good by the analytics, by anyone's kind of a consensus, like what's a good defense in college, there's in any given year, there are less than 20 of those teams.
Right.
And so I've tried to explain this before in text and it takes way too long. So hopefully I'll be able to sum this up vocally a little bit better. But
sure.
Essentially, yeah. Power Five conference players, especially the ones with pedigree coming into school, it's already assumed that they are a better, higher quality player than most of the Group of Five schools just in general. Yes?
Yeah. Yep.
Great. And so that's awesome. So all those Power Five schools play, you know, 2, 3, 4, even 5 worthless bad defenses from Group of Five conferences every single year. So they get 4, you know, weeks of the year on the college side to just absolutely trash worst competition that they are, that they should be better than. But even in their Power Five more difficult schedule, they're only going to play, like if it's a really tough schedule, a max of like 2 or 3 of the really challenging and tough, legitimately good defenses. And so I would rather, one, take a shot on their NFL talent, and mm-hmm. two, take a shot on the fact that they're still going to produce because they are a better player and they're actually beating up on bad teams in cupcake weeks 3 to 5 times a year already, given the scheduling structure. And then when they face off against the quote unquote equal competition in the Power Five, they're still most of the time not real NFL players that they're lining up against.
Right.
You know, so like, so the advantage of like, oh, I'm just going to go get a bunch of these Group of Five conference wide receivers, that's great in theory, but they're probably not much better than the defensive backs that they're playing. And 3 or 4 of the weeks, they're playing a Power Five team that's going to crush them mm-hmm. and shut them down. So the end of year raw stats might look better, but if they're absolutely meaningless at the end of their college career because they're just a productive G5 player, I don't care about that player. So there's almost no reason or upside for college winning or NFL long-term winning to pursue a bunch of or way too many of the like college only producing players.
Yeah, I don't know. That makes a ton of sense to me. That was very well explained. And, you know, I know we didn't want to talk too much about specific players because we want this to be, you know, an episode people can listen to regardless of the year. But I mean, Devonta Smith for Alabama just kind of showed that, like, yes. And this is with the pandemic that we just, you know, suffered through. They only played SEC teams, yet he was still able to produce week in and week out at just an insane level, even though he was playing SEC defenses, which are, you know, yeah, maybe outside of the Big Ten, considered to be some of the tougher defenses in the nation. So, you know, if I mean, also he's an elite receiver. But to your point, it just shows that, yeah, these Power Five players that have NFL hopes and dreams and aspirations will also be able to produce in and out of like week in and week out. So, yeah, I know that makes a lot of sense. So when you're looking at your, well, first off, let me ask you this. Do you typically do an NFL or an NCAA draft first when you're doing a startup? Or is it kind of just mixed? Do you have a, and do you have a preference?
Yeah. So it's generally like, it depends on the time of year, I guess. Like last year I had one where we, I believe we did NFL side first. But I prefer building out the college side first, just knowing that helps me kind of know what to do on the NFL side a little bit. And
that was my next question.
Yeah. It's like, I know where I'm going to have deficiencies based on how I structured my NCAA team. Now some people would argue like, well, the NFL side are the holes I have in my roster are more concrete. Yes, that's true. But I think I just have, I guess more meaningful data points. I've got like 45 players that I can actually plug in and play. And I probably drafted 20 to 30 guys that, that I have like prioritized at different positions. And I have certain confidence ratings assigned to each one of them, of like projected round draft capital. And, so I can go, okay, I kind of whiffed completely on tight end. And I kind of, you know, I did not build up my, a running back core enough. So maybe I go running back heavier in the early rounds and in the NFL startup side and really hammer out and make sure I definitely have this figured out for at least 2 to 3 years. Cause I'm just not going to be able to fill it out here and here. Whereas on the NFL side, like the truly meaningful players on my roster, like maybe go up to 20. After that, it's a bunch of flyers.
Right. So, right.
Yeah.
No, that's good. Cause that was my next question was exactly that. Like, does what you draft in one league impact how you draft, like whichever one you're drafting first in a startup? So in both startups I'm in this off season, we're doing NFL first, you know? And so like, do I compose my NCAA draft around what I see my potential holes to be on my NFL squad? Or do I treat them, in fact, as two independent leagues and like, I want to win this one and I want to win that one. So it doesn't really matter what I have in my NFL one. I want to do what's best and always take the best available player in the NCAA. But I like your answer because, well, one, it was what I was kind of thinking about doing anyway. So in one of the leagues, I have like three really strong quarterbacks already in the NFL. And I'm not extremely deep at wide receiver. So, and running back is just fine. So it's like, okay, I'm planning on focusing a little bit more of my attention on my NCAA roster on wide receivers that I think could hit in the NFL. And it sounds like you're saying that you would kind of tend to do the same thing.
Yeah, because I'm treating it like a feeder.
Yeah.
Yes, I want to win on the college side, but I definitely want to fill in the gaps and really build into where I see my roster having needs. Just like the real NFL draft would, if teams could grab rights to players years in advance, like they would know where they're going to have a hole. So it's almost like the way that college programs build out the recruiting classes, you know?
Right.
It's like Clemson, they're probably not going to be able to pull, like last year after DJU did his thing, they weren't going to be able to pull a five-star quarterback to come in and sit on the bench behind DJU. And they didn't need to either anyway, because he was going to be there for a few years. So if I know I'm set at certain spots, like I don't need to quote unquote recruit or right. draft these filler spots where I'm already abso-freaking-lutely loaded. Ideally, you just always take the best player available. And if I basically have players grouped in tiers. I'll never like reach down tiers to grab a position that I just want to fill up more of. But I'm definitely going to lean a certain way when I get to my pick. Based on the holes that are going to need to be filled on the NFL side.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense to me. And I think that's absolutely great. I'd be curious to hear how you kind of view roster construction. Well, before I get into that specific question, let me ask an NFL specific question. Do you view your NFL roster in a C2C league any different than you would a traditional startup like Dynasty League?
I think besides just like, you know, the more prioritization on quarterbacks up front, not necessarily, because I'm still having to do the same thing, still building up the same fantasy points. But if I'm, if I am more confident in my assessment of one position over, or another, I'll be fine just going more BPA and avoiding one position, especially like with tight ends, I guess. I find myself completely fading tight ends, on the NFL side in C2C leagues, because everyone in college completely ignores the tight end and drafts them in like round 18 in the startup. Even the really good and good productive ones, like a lot of times people are just not as in tune with what makes a good tight end prospect very early on. I mean, like even the real draft Knicks, you see this all the time. Like how late was real draft people when it came to like TJ Hockenson? Or like how late were people to the party? Like even on Kyle Pitts, I feel like people were really late to understanding.
Yeah.
Like, even heading into this year, like, right. No, this dude's a freaking monster.
Yep.
But like Debbie nerds were more in on it. But I think the guys that can get some capital that aren't as obvious as Pitts, people just completely ignore on the college side because it's not as sexy. And like you don't win your league from the tight end position.
So right, especially in college, yeah.
Yeah, so I find myself like getting to round 14, 15 and just hammering 4 to 5 tight ends and being the most stacked tight end team in the league, and then getting 2 or 3 real quick draft capital type tight ends showing up in the NFL, and either being able to move them for a more proven older veteran at the position or something like that. But I found there are creative ways to build out the NFL side at tight end and getting replacement level production easily, mm-hmm. And dominating the position in college and building a pipeline at a position that people just overlook and don't care about. Even in tight end premium, it's just like college people don't care about that on that side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason why I ask, and this is probably obvious to all the listeners, but I'm just going to spell it out anyway. The reason I ask specifically about building out your NFL team is because when you have a college team, as well, where you have 12 to 16 fantasy managers who each have 50 players, after your first startup year, when you get into year 2, 3 and beyond, your rookie drafts are pretty bare. There are not many players outside of your FCS guys like your Trey Lance this year, or Carson Wentz a couple of years ago, and a couple of guys that came out of absolutely nowhere. You're not going to have much room to build out your team from the rookie draft or a waiver wire in season. So that's why I ask you, because it's important. Like you really want to set yourself up for success in your startup drafts, because so much is going to depend on longevity of success based on the decisions that you make. So kind of speaking along that idea of, you know, the rookie drafts being, you know, a little bit bare, because everyone's already on a college team for the most part, waiver wires being pretty, pretty sparse. I imagine like a James Robinson last year for Jacksonville Jaguars, he was probably available for a while in some of these leagues, but maybe not. I don't know. How do you look at both? Well, first, let's talk about roster construction. How do you construct your NCAA roster? Is there a certain amount of players that you want at each position? So like, let's say you, for the sake of simple math, because it's getting a little bit late and I'm terrible at math. Let's say you have a 50-man roster for your NCAA squad. How many quarterbacks, and let's say you have to start 2 quarterbacks. How many quarterbacks do you want on your roster? How many running backs? How many wide receivers? How many tight ends? What are you hoping to leave the draft with the bare minimum at each position?
Sure. If it's like 40, 45, 50, something like that on that side, I say 45 or 50 in most leagues. It seems kind of crazy the numbers that you're going to end up with, but I'm always, even at the tight end position, I'm going to have like 5, which just seems so crazy. But if with all the weird bye weeks and the scheduling and tight in college and trying to structure it in a way that I don't just have all super seniors so that next year I have 0 tight ends and I have to draft them. You right. Know, like I basically try to spread it out and make sure it's diversified a little bit. So, you know, like 5 tight ends or so, 9 or 10 quarterbacks.
Wow. That actually. Many.
Yeah. I think the league I just wrapped up, I think I had 9 or 10 quarterbacks.
And do so, you,
yeah.
do you focus on their draft year eligibility as well when you're drafting them, or are you taking best available? Do you want to try to sprinkle in a couple freshmen with sophomores and you know, upperclassmen? How are you approaching that?
I mean, early on especially, it's like it's best player on my board, but later on, like, I might give a longer look to some freshmen to kind of give myself some build, or I might, like I said, in the later rounds, fill it out with a bunch of just productive, like, weird scheme G5 school quarterbacks that are going to get me 18 to 22 points.
An SMU quarterback.
yeah, exactly. So just somebody that is definitely not going pro, but can fill out my roster when all three of my legit NFL prospects are out or one of them's injured. And frankly, there's a lot more players and there are a lot more injuries.
Yeah.
So like it's funny, like, look at how many players you'll have on some kind of designated IR short term, like they're out for the week and it's just like so frustrating. So you never want to be out quarterbacks, especially because if you're out, if you invested in like four or five freshmen, three legit NFL guys and only one other G5 guy and two of your NFL guys get hurt, good luck. You're going to go 0-for the rest of the season,
right?
On the quarterback side. So it's having balance, I think, at every position. But you know, earlier rounds, especially, it's just my big board more than anything in terms of NFL draft picks. But realistically, unless you're just a pompous, like, arrogant weirdo that thinks you're smarter than everyone, like, once you get past like round 20, frankly, you don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah,
like, you don't. Like, you to differentiate between like this freshman versus, you know, the wide receiver 40 in the class of 2024 and the wide receiver 41 in the class of 2020. Good luck, dude. Like, yeah, nobody freaking knows. So yeah, it's just all about having a balance. So beyond that, I'm stacking the heck out of our running backs and wide receivers. So you'll notice that with 15 gone between quarterbacks and tight ends, that, you know, if it's 45 roster spots or 50 spots, like, I'm having like 15 or more running backs and wide receivers, which sounds kind of bizarre, but depending on your starting requirements, it takes a lot to fill that out. And frankly, those are the tradable players that go for a ton in this format outside of like, you know, the sure-fired no-brainer Trevor Lawrence type quarterbacks that, you know, you can just know two or three years out, like, duh, that guy's going pro. But there just aren't many of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
but those are the ones we all think about. Yeah.
Yes. But like there's in any given class, there's really only like day one and day two. Typically, you only see between five and seven quarterbacks that get drafted. Day one, you generally don't see five guys like this year get drafted. So it's like really in all of college football, maybe there's 10 max in your entire league that are like those kind of players at any given time. And it's probably way less than that are actually truly safe. So people love the truly, you know, hey, wide receivers, like every single year, there's like 14 day one, two guys and running backs, like everybody wants the next running back. So they're freaking going hard for those guys. So I have no problem having 15 to 20 running backs and wide receivers each.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah. So, you know, we're coming to the end here. I want to ask a couple more questions. I'm just thinking about how volatile these college players are. We were in a clubhouse the other day. By the way, you should follow Travis over there too, because he starts up a bunch of great rooms. So get on Clubhouse, follow him. How do people find you on there? Titan something?
Titan Travis on there. Yeah, Titan Travis. Or you can just look for my name, or I actually founded the College Football Club on there. And I just actually, I don't know if you were in there, but I interviewed a Clemson offensive lineman.
I got in there 5 minutes too late, dude.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was incredible. It was just great. We were talking about his position conversion from defensive tackle to offensive line.
So cool.
Asking him questions about DJU and like his favorite running backs to block for.
Oh, it's awesome.
And like, oh, dude, it was incredible.
Yeah, I saw you post it on Twitter, so I jumped in there and you weren't even in there anymore, but the room was still open and there were other people chatting. I was like, dang it, I missed it. So follow Travis for sure on there. We try to do a Devy room every couple of weeks, or college football room every couple of weeks too. So we have fun. But with, like, we were just talking about like how a guy like Chuba Hubbard this time last year was the running back number two. You know, it was Etienne, then Hubbard, and then Najee Harris. And now all of a sudden, Hubbard is not being drafted in the first round of rookie drafts. And who knows where he goes in the NFL. So yeah. So the volatility is real. Like, these dudes rise and fall fast. So if you have a college asset, mm-hmm. that's, say, an underclassman that is just crushing it, are you likely to hold on to him with the hopes that he becomes the next Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley, whoever it might be? Or are you going to trade him for proven NFL capital?
If I can trade him for proven NFL players that are established, that aren't aging veterans at like the running back position or something like that, I'll definitely do that. Especially, and that's why I go hard on just the guys that have any hope of having an NFL projection, because those kind of players are overvalued in general. Yeah. Because they don't always produce the most in college. And even if they do, they may not pan out to be worth much in the NFL. So I am definitely all for targeting NFL value with a player that's spiking and blowing up, especially if it's a G5 type of player, or even from like a program that doesn't typically even send players. And I know that sounds kind of, whoa, you don't scout the helmet, you scout the players, but like at the same time, they're actually, especially via my 22,000 player database and the recruiting history and everything like that, there's definitely some validity to like the school mattering as well.
So can I interrupt you real quick with a present day example? So Breece Hall just finished up his sophomore year, crushed it. Yeah. Absolutely incredible. Right now he's my RB1 going into next year. I'm kind of assuming his junior year will be his last season.
Yeah.
I think he's probably going to go early in my NCAA draft that's upcoming in a couple of weeks here, because I know I for sure will take him if he's out there, because I love Breece Hall. Yeah. But as we just saw with Chuba Hubbard, this stuff can change quickly. What level NFL talent, I know I'm throwing you on the spot here, what kind of NFL talent would it take if you had Breece Hall right now? What would you be looking for in return for a prospect like him who, A, is going to have college production, we're pretty sure, at Iowa State. But to your point, Iowa State is not like running back you know, like they're not pumping out these amazing NFL prospects. So there's a little bit of volatility there. What would you be doing with a guy like Breece Hall right now, given that we don't know when he's going to go to the NFL, where he's going to be drafted, all the things, but right now he's everyone's RB1 or 2.
Yeah, so even though this isn't a normal league, I always, because it makes sense to me, this language can kind of speak across whatever dynasty format or fantasy football format you play. I always think within what would this player be? What am I projecting them to be in their rookie class? And finding a player like next year, I would say that Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell in Superflex leagues are going to be 1 and 2, and Breece Hall is going to be 3. And then there's probably a teardrop, honestly, after that. And so I would say I'm targeting a player who I believe is on par with the 1.03 in a normal dynasty rookie draft, that kind of player in the league. So that's going to be a young player that is a top, you know, maybe back end of round 3 type level asset in a dynasty league.
So like, would you do it for like a Calvin Ridley type if you were, you know, a little wide receiver needy?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, because he's proven, already there, got the capital, and he's hit.
And he's not perfect. Too old yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. No, that's great. How do you target, you know, talking about trades here, how do you focus on a rebuild? Like, if you're struggling, if you find yourself kind of in the worst place to be in a dynasty league, in a C2C league, is middle of the pack, where you're finishing, you know, between numbers 5 and 8 or 5 and 9, because you're not getting the first overall pick when you're the 12th and able to rebuild that way. So you can't even trade those picks for anything. You're just kind of stuck in the middle. So you kind of want to avoid that. If you find yourself in there, how do you kind of focus on a rebuild? What's the best way, in your opinion, in a league like this that's so deep in both college and NFL players that it's hard to, you know, draft players, it's hard to find players on the waiver wire? What are you going to do?
Yeah, and first and foremost, I think just backing up with the waivers thing, if you are in a college that can't league, I know some leagues have waivers that are kind of more open and you can add more players. And if that's the case in your College to Canton league, frankly, that's the wrong way to play College to Canton. But if it is like that, it's really easy to rebuild because you can just constantly be adding players left and right off the waivers, and it's stupid. You can pick
You're talking about the like college Zach side, Wilson. Right?
Yeah, you can like pick up Zach Wilson by accident on waivers last year and then get a first round quarterback in the spring, which is stupid. Like that's that completely ruins the idea, and like it kills the depth in every draft thereafter, because everyone snatched up literally anything that breathes that did anything in the college season. So your rookie draft is a hard zero. And yeah, even your college draft in the next season is basically just freshmen, which is just disgusting. So don't do that if you're starting a College to Canton league. Do not make it like open normal waivers on the college side. Limit it to maximum two acquisitions in the entire year, because also you get people that like will abuse it knowing that it's open and just be like, I'm just going to draft 27 quarterbacks and then I'll figure out what the rest of it.
Right.
And it just ruins parity because people who haven't played it before or aren't veterans and don't know how to do it just get screwed by the lack of a position. That could be its own podcast. But anyway,
yeah,
like I'm very passionate. You treat it like it's like an advanced kind of crazy Debbie league, but you know, it forces people to actually draft players at every position. Just
sure.
It's just better for parity in general. But if I'm going to rebuild at all, I'm going to completely blow up the NFL side because like with my positions that are like, I'm basically just dropping a bomb on my running back position and starting over, you know, trading anything that is breathing and has running back three upside.
Yeah.
And with quarterbacks, I'm okay kind of holding because we've seen guys, we just don't know how long these guys are going to play. Drew Brees.
Yeah,
you know, we thought he was going to play forever. You know, Tom Brady is going to play till he's 95. These guys are, you know, we just don't know anymore. So I'll hold on to my quarterbacks unless I, you know, have one of the Bradys that he'll eventually leave. You know, it's one of the ancient guys I'll be fine moving off of. But blow up the running back position because people are really super thirsty for that. Like, for example, I was not going to be super competitive even coming into this last year. So I just moved Todd Gurley like week one or two. And I got in return Kyren Williams and Rakim Jarrett for Maryland.
Yeah,
for Maryland. Kyren Williams running back at Notre Dame early in the year, he blew up. And Rakim Jarrett, just the speculative guys. I loved Rakim Jarrett as a true freshman. Couldn't get him in the real draft, but got him by completely moving off of Todd Gurley. And now Todd Gurley's dead. And Kyren Williams looks like a day two back, and Rakim Jarrett is the top five wide receiver in the 2023 draft. So you can blow up NFL side like that, get rid of some guys before they completely go off the rails, especially when people still think they're competitive earlier in the year and will be pushing for the playoffs. So that's what I do. I make my move by mid-October or so, because all the guys that are breaking out, people are still in the quote unquote unsure mode. It's like, I don't know, is that real? Like on the college,
right.
Is that really going to stay? It generally, if you look at production arcs, like for these guys in college, like if they break out early, most of the time outside of Kyrus Jackson for Georgia last year, they continue doing.
Hey,
so.
He's coming back this year with why can't I remember his name with. The injury that took place. Why can't
JT Daniels? Well, George Pickens is out.
Pickens. I was thinking Perkins. I was like, I know it's not Perkins. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah. So drop a bomb on your NFL side that's not going to help you in the next 2 or 3 years and see what happens.
Yeah. So do you try to keep wide receivers just because they have a longer shelf life typically in the NFL?
Yeah, typically. And people aren't as thirsty for them. So.
Yeah, yep. That's good. Do you find it more difficult to rebuild in a C2C league than it is in a typical dynasty league?
Just because, I mean, there's in theory, like, oh, but there's more ways to rebuild, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, like, everyone's drafting like 120 something freshmen every year. So it's like, good luck finding the next breakout because unless you traded for a bunch of college picks, like you're not going to be able to fill in the gaps as much there, and even when you are, you're literally waiting 2-3 years for it,
Right.
In many cases.
I'm sure I forgot to ask a bunch of questions. In a second here, I'm going to ask you if there's anything that you want to talk about that I forgot to talk about. But I do have one more question. And that is, when looking at, you know, whether it's trades or when you're starting up your dynasty league, how do you approach the draft? Do you put a higher value on rookies and unproven talent with huge upside? Or would you rather have a veteran that's like 28 years old, that's proven it in the NFL?
Yeah.
And I should have asked you this question a week ago before my draft started.
But no, I think I'm fine going with the older players as well on the NFL side. Just not making sure that, you know, it's not all those guys, you know. Just I don't try to build it out in a way that like, oh, I'm just going to, I'll completely reload. Because it's, even though you have 45 players, maybe 50 players, you're going to have 12 to 13 to 14 guys coming in from that crew if you've structured it right every single year. And out of those 12, 13, 14, 15 guys, max generally, you're looking at 4 or 5 contributing members at all to your NFL squad. So you can't really bank on, oh, I'm just going to replenish. That's just how it's going to go. Because you might have a year or two where you just don't fill in with a high upside, crazy star level player. Because it's really easy to plug in guys that you can flex. And just like have hit rates on guys. Oh, he got day two capital. That's cool. But his name's Denzel Mims and now he's always washed out. Like, so it's like it doesn't always work out. So banking on just building back in is not going to cut it.
Yeah.
Got to have balance. Yeah.
I moved my, you know, 5th and 10th round NCAA pick for a 32-year-old Julio Jones. And to me, like, he was just sitting there it was the 10th round. And to me, that was just crazy value. Like, maybe I only get 1 year out of him, but I'm probably going to win this league this year if I don't just get destroyed by injuries, because I have a stupid stacked team because everyone went super, super young. Rookies went really early and I'm getting Julio Jones in the 10th round. So just wanted to ask, about that. Yeah. And I find that like I have very few, like we're doing our NFL drafts with rookie picks. With rookie players before the NFL draft has started. And I just refuse to take any of these guys. Like let's not talk about Jamar Chase. A guy like Tylan Wallace, I'm super excited about. All the talent in the world. If he ends up in Baltimore, like, stab me in the eye with a fork. Like, I don't want that. So I'm not going to take him. I'm not going to take him above some of these other guys that I like Tyler Lockett, where I know what he's going to do, you know? So just wanted to ask you that. What did I forget to ask you? What are some other important things to talk about with C2C before we call it a night?
I mean, man, you covered just about everything, I think, just because, and we got into some kind of game theory kind of structure. And I think, though, that people, because the timeline on these leagues, just kind of an extension of what you just said, the timeline is implied that it's actually going to stick, right? Like in the very beginning, it's like, whoa, like we're making these picks, like everyone's in it for the long haul. I better just build out super young. And so that makes all these old guys like super cheap early on. So yeah, I don't have a problem, going a little older on the NFL side, but having balance, it's just finding that balance.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think that's key because everyone's way overvalues the youth, just in general. But on the college side, I found, and really Wisp and I both did this. We kind of built it out to where it was like, well, on the college side, we basically structured it like we're going to go with super safe NFL projection kind of players, that are like, eligible for 2022. Maybe a couple of 2023 guys. And then we're going to go nothing but freshmen, because like, I don't want to have like the guy who kind of almost halfway broke out last year as a freshman or didn't really do much last year in their freshman year. Now they might have a sophomore breakout year. Like already, if they didn't break out as a freshman, the chances that they're going to do it as a sophomore, even though they had pedigree, is not crazy high. So I go young and old, trying to get a larger group of quote unquote true freshman breakout candidates.
Yeah.
Because even if I don't necessarily even believe in them, if I have a larger batch of those players, and I get 2 or 3 more than my league mates do, their perceived value, regardless of what their actual production on the college side or NFL side is ever going to be, is going to be higher. So I found myself having like a big chunk of 2022 eligibles and a big chunk of 2024 guys and like six or seven in total 2023 eligibles.
Yeah.
Just because the only guys that I was going to go for that were 2023 eligible already smashed this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't want to try to project when it's going to be their second or third year breakout, especially right now with all of, you know, with this COVID year. I don't know. It's just, there's just a lot of projection involved in this year, especially all the variables, the people that haven't already done so, done something, because we're seeing 2 to 3 times the normal transfer rates. I'm really curious to see what that has to do with the college landscape this year and next, because they still haven't even told programs if they're going to allow extra scholarships due to the eligibility yet. Like, this is April and people don't even know for 2022 if they're going to have 85 scholarships or 100. And
that's crazy.
That's a whole other podcast itself. But like right now I'm going for surefire projections in the future and diversifying my portfolio for true freshmen, possible breakouts, just to find those guys that'll pop the most. Because especially when you get later in the draft and people are, oh, I'm just going to go for the college side production, you see 4 stars continuing to drop and drop and drop and drop, that aren't like the obvious names that like the top 5 incoming freshmen at their position. So you can get the wide receiver 20 to 40 for absolute pennies, and they're 4-star players in good programs that might break out.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. That's really good. Well, thank you so much, Travis. There's a lot of good stuff in there. I'll re-listen to this a few times because I'm still drafting and I have a feeling I'm not done. I just don't want to start too many startups this year because I want to do a couple more next year as well, you know? So you got to space them out.
I'm right there with you, man. I'm right there with you. I'm like, I'm only one of these here. Eventually my goal is to have just nothing but college to get in leagues.
Really. Yeah.
I'm going to have zero normal dynasty leagues.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's fun. Well, that was really, really insightful. A lot of really great information. I'm going to be sure to not tell any of the other guys in my leagues about this episode until after we're done drafting, but no, that's great. Yeah. I really appreciate you jumping on with us. Oh, not with us. It's just me today, but it was good stuff. Again, follow Travis, listen to his podcast. Just so much great information. The dude knows so much. We'll do these clubhouses or I'll jump on his podcast and I'll just throw out a random name. And all of a sudden Travis is just giving me all of the stats. He'll tell me everything I need to know about a player. And it's just very insightful. So Travis knows his stuff. You want to follow him. If you want to have a leg up on the competition, he is the man. So FF_TravisM on Twitter. And then of course he's got the C2C podcast here over on RotoViz. And that's coming out weekly. What date is that dropping right now?
Wednesdays generally. So it'll drop on the actual College to Canton feed Wednesday morning sometime. And then in the PM, it'll, I think 5 PM Central or Eastern, I think it'll drop on the RotoViz feed.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thanks again. It was a blast. It was fun talking some, you know, high level nerded out. We got real, real embarrassingly deep real in weird. The weeds here. This is an episode I can never let my wife listen to because she will leave me for sure. but that was awesome. I really appreciate the time. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back with you real soon.